this causes are from Sanyukta Nikaya, this book. Sanyukta Nikaya has five books, and the second book is called Nidhana Veka Sanyukta. And among the Nidhana Veka Sanyukta, and there is one Sanyukta called Rahula Sanyukta. And it consists of two groups. First group consists of 10 discourses, and the second consists of 12 discourses. But don't be afraid of discourses being many, because the whole of first group and then 10 of second group, they are actually the same. The first group is delivered because Rahula asked for it, and second is just Buddha delivered without asking. So only two suttas are a little different. So the sutta begins with the usual Evam Me Sutam, thus have I heard. So Buddha was living at Savatthi in Jeta's grove in Anathapindika's park at that time. Then the Venerable Rahula approached the Buddha, paid homage to him, sat down to one side, and then said to him, "Venerable sir, it would be good if the Blessed One would teach me the Dhamma in brief, so that having heard the Dhamma from the Blessed One, I may dwell alone, withdrawn, diligent, ardent, and resolute." This is the stock phrase used by those who ask Buddha to teach, that it would be good if the Blessed One would teach me the Dhamma in brief and so on. So in that, Rahula here said, "I might, having heard the Dhamma from the Blessed One, I might dwell alone." So after having heard the Dhamma, he will not go with other persons and so on. So he will be alone and withdrawn. Withdrawn means seclusion. So he will be secluded also. He will be alone, he will be secluded. Secluded means no sounds of whatever, the place where is no sounds of whatever, and there he will recite. And then he said, appamatto, I mean, here, diligent. So that means he will have sati. He will apply sati and live with this sati or mindfulness. And then atapi, here translated as ardent. So I have told you about atapi many times. Atapi comes from the word atapa, and atapa usually means heat or sun heat. Just as the sun heats the heats the things here, the effort burns up the defilements. So when it says atabi, that means I will make effort. And then the last one is pahitato, and that is translated in English as resolute. But pahitato again is understood by modern authors as one thing, and the commentators as another. According to modern authors, this pahitato means just a resolute, or again, will make effort. So in that case, it is the same as atabi. But the commentaries said that it does not mean having viriya, but it means having sent the mind towards attainment or towards liberation. So having sent the mind towards liberation or attainment, he will recite after hearing Dhamma from the Blessed One. So Rahula said teach me the Dhamma in brief. So Buddha taught the Dhamma in really brief form. And this Dhamma he taught in these discourses are the same as those we find in Anatta Lakkhana Sutta. So if you are familiar with Anatta Lakkhana Sutta, you are familiar with these discourses. Buddha said, Rahula, what do you think? Is the I permanent or impermanent? Well, you know the answer. Impermanent venerable sir. Is what is impermanent suffering or happiness? Suffering, venerable sir. Is what is impermanent, suffering and subject to change, fit to be regarded thus? This is mine, this I am, this is myself. The answer is, again, no, venerable sir. So with regard to the I, Buddha asked questions and then Rahula gave answers. Now the first one, the I. Now the I means not the ball of the eye, but the eye sense. It is called eye sensitivity. That is, in the eye there is a place where the image strikes. So that place is called the eye sensitivity, and that eye sensitivity is meant here. So that eye sensitivity is permanent or impermanent? And the answer is impermanent. Now, judging from this, Rahula, although he has not attained anything yet. Laola has practiced vipassana meditation. If he has not practiced vipassana meditation, he cannot answer this. So we must assume that Rahula know something about vipassana meditation. So is the eye permanent or impermanent? And answer is impermanent. Now how would you answer? Permanent or impermanent? It looks like permanent, right? The eye here, it looks like permanent. But actually, these material properties arise and disappear again and again and again. Although we may think that this is one eye, actually, the eye is renewed every moment. And so, I is impermanent. And also, I is impermanent because the I has the I arises and then disappears. So when something arises and disappears, it is impermanent. First, there is nothing. And then I arises, and then it disappears. So before arising, there is nothing, and then there is arising, and immediately after arising, there is a disappearing. So when a thing has this characteristic of disappearing after arising, it is we know that it is impermanent. So the I also is arises and disappears, and so it is impermanent. Or it has a beginning and an end. It arises and it disappears. Since it arises and disappears, or since it has the arising and disappearing, it is impermanent. So when asked whether the I is permanent or impermanent, the correct answer is impermanent. Then Buddha asked the next question, is what is impermanent suffering or happiness? Again, the correct answer is suffering. Now, what has the characteristic of arising and disappearing is called dukkha. So dukkha is something that has the beginning and an end, or that arises and that disappears. Why it is called dukkha? Because it is afflicted by arising and disappearing. Now, when you note something, you know that the thing you note disappears after arising, and then next object you note again arising and disappearing, and then the next object arising and disappearing, and so on. So when you see the arising and disappearing this way, you have the sense of being afflicted by arising and disappearing, or oppressed by arising and disappearing. That oppression by the constant oppression by arising and disappearing is the characteristic of dukkha. So here, the jhakkhu has the arising and disappearing, and so it is dukkha. Is what is impermanent, suffering, and subject to change? fit to be regarded thus. This is mine, this I am, this is myself, no venerable sir. This is the third question. So the first question is, according to the first question, it is I is impermanent. And according to the second question, it is suffering. So when it is impermanent, and when it is suffering, and when it is subject to change, this is again the cause for suffering. So when it is subject to change, it is fit to be regarded the I as this is mine, this I am, and this is myself. The answer is no. Now, this is mine, this I am, this is myself, these three things. Now, this is mine is grasping by lobha or tanha, and this I am is grasping by mana or conceit, and this is myself is grasping by atta. So can the I be called mine, or can the I be called I am, or can the I be called myself? And the answer is no. So these are the three questions put to Rahula and answered by Rahula with regard to the I. So if you understand the answer with regard to the I, then you also you also know the answer to ear and so on. So that second thing here is the ear. Is the ear permanent or impermanent? Again, the answer is impermanent. What is impermanent? Suffering or happiness? Suffering. Is what is impermanent, suffering, and subject to change fit to be regarded as this is mine, this I am, this is myself? No. So when you understand the answer to the first I, then you know the answer to the ear and so on. And the ear means, again, the ear sensitivity, where the sound strikes, not the whole ear, but the inner ear. And the nose means, it is said that there is a place in the nose, in the two cavities, where the smell is sensed. And that place is called the nose here. And the tongue is taste buds. And the body means the whole of the body, excepting the hair and nails. And the mind. Now the mind here means the vipassana mind, not all the mind. Now there is a mundane mind and supramundane mind. Now supramundane mind is not needed here, because it is about vipassana. Since it is about vipassana, the mind here means the supramundane mind. So the ear, the nose, the tongue, the body, and the mind, are they permanent or impermanent? They are impermanent. And is what is impermanent suffering or happiness suffering. That's what is impermanent suffering and subject to change, fit to be regarded as this is mine, this I am, this is myself. No. But
there you say the supramundane mind and mundane mind, and the mind here, the Vipassana mind.
Mundane mind.
Mundane mind.
Seeing thus, Rahula, the instructed noble disciple experiences revulsion towards the eye, revulsion towards the ear, revulsion towards the nose, revulsion towards the tongue, revulsion towards the body, revulsions towards the mind. So when a yogi sees like this, that I and so on are impermanent, suffering, and non-soul, then he becomes he experiences reversion towards the I and so on. Now here, the first one is the instructed. That means instructed according to the teachings of the Buddha. Instructed sometimes instructed by attainment of something, and sometimes instructed by way of teaching. So that is called instructed. And noble disciple, it can mean two things. Disciple who is noble, Ariya, and also he is called noble disciple because he is disciple of the noble Buddha. So both can be taken here, noble disciple. So he experiences reversion towards the I and so on. So when he sees all these I and so on as impermanent suffering and non-soul, he did not like the I, ear and so on. So he is revulsed towards the eye, towards the ear, and so on. Now, by the word revulsion, revulsion means dispassion. So by the word revulsion, the commentator meant the one stage of vipassana knowledge, which is reversion or dispassion. And this reversion or dispassion is called powerful vipassana. There are two kinds of vipassana, not so powerful and powerful. So this is called powerful vipassana. So here the disciple reaches that stage where he is dispassionate towards the eye, towards the ear, and so on. And this revulsion is the insight leading to emergence. It is called insight leading to emergence. That means insight leading to magga. So it is close to magga when you reach this stage, revulsion towards the eye, ear, and so on. Revulsion, he becomes dispassionate. Now that means after revulsion, he reaches magga. So dispassionate here means magga. In Pali, it is virajati. So virajati is the magga in Pali. The attachment and so on are like dye. It's a stain on the cloth or something. And this magga can wash the stain, and so it is called virajati or viraga. So here, experiencing revulsion, he becomes dispassionate means experiencing revulsion, or after experiencing revulsion, he attains magga stage. Through dispassion, his mind is liberated. And here, liberated means liberated from mental defilements. And that means the kala moment. Now, immediately after magga moment follows kala moment. Now, magga moment is destroying the mental defilements, and kala moment is when a person reaches the kala moment, and he has destroyed the mental defilements. So here, he is liberated means he is free from the mental defilements as the not as eradicating, but having eradicated. When it is liberated, there comes the knowledge. It is liberated. Now, after the attainment of kala moment, there comes the reflection. So here, reflection is meant by when it is liberated, there comes the knowledge. It is liberated. And to show the soil of liberation, he said the stride is the birth, the holy life has been lived, what had to be done has been done. There is no more for this state of being. And that means he has become an arahant. So first, he knows that the stride is birth. So there is no more rebirth for him who has reached the arahantship. Because he has eradicated all mental defilements. And since mental defilements are eradicated, the future aggregates do not arise. So, in that sense, birth is destroyed. Actually, birth cannot be destroyed, because birth means at the beginning, we are born as human beings, right? So that birth cannot be destroyed. But here, Buddhist described means but is rendered incapable of arising because the mental defilements are eradicated. And that is called described is but. And the holy life has been lived. Holy life really means magga, brahmacharya. That means holy life consisting in magga. So that has also been lived because he has now become an arahant. What had to be done has been done. So that means what has to be done with regard the Four Noble Truths he has already done. First Noble Truth he knows thoroughly. Second Noble Truth he abandons. Third Noble Truth he realizes, and the Fourth Noble Truth he has perfected. I mean, he has developed, he has perfected. So this, since this is done, there is no more thing to be done regarding these four functions of magga. So what has to be done has been done. There is no more for this state of being. Therefore, there is nothing to be done for this state of being and for the attainment of arahantship. Since he has attained arahantship, he is no longer he is no more. And there is no more state of this being. So by this sutta, the Buddha taught Rahula the vipassana meditation. So how many vipassana knowledges do you notice in this sutta? Buddha asked Rahula, is chakku permanent or impermanent? And then answer is impermanent. And what is impermanent? It is suffering or happiness? Suffering. And what is impermanent, suffering and subject to change? Is it fit to be regarded as this and this is mine, this I am, this is myself? So what knowledge does it mean? Now you are knowing the impermanent suffering and also nature of things, right? So that means samasana jnana and udiyabhaya jnana. And then bhaya jnana, no. Buddha jumped to revulsion. So, bhayanyana, bhanganyana, bhayanyana, adinoanyana, those are not mentioned here. And then, nibbida is mentioned here. The reversion or dispassion towards nama and rupa. And then, the magga is mentioned by Virajati, and phala, I mean magga is mentioned by what? Dispassionate, and phala is mentioned by liberated, and the reflection is mentioned by when it is liberated, there comes the knowledge, and so on. So by this, Buddha taught the Vipassana in brief. And although Rahula did not become enlightened, I think he understands very well. If you understand this one sutta, then the other suttas are not difficult to understand. So the second sutta is forms and others. Forms means material properties, sound, odor, taste, tactile objects, and mind. So Buddha put the same question and the same answer. So this is the second sutta. Form, sound, odor, taste, tactile objects, and mind. And then the third sutta is eye consciousness, ear consciousness, nose consciousness, tongue consciousness, body consciousness, and mind consciousness, the same thing. And then the fourth is contact, eye contact, ear contact, nose contact, tongue contact, body contact, and mind contact. Again, it is permanent, impermanent, and so on. And then number five is feeling born of eye contact, feeling born of ear contact, feeling born of nose contact, feeling born of tongue contact, feeling born of body contact, feeling born of mind contact. And number six is different. Number six is perception of forms. Now, perception is one chetasika, sanya chetasika. So, rupa sanya means perception of forms, making map of forms and so on. So perception of forms, perception of sounds, perception of odors, perception of taste, perception of tactile objects, and perception of mental phenomenon or just mind. So are they permanent or impermanent and so on. And then number seven is volition regarding forms, volition regarding sound, volition regarding odors, volition regarding taste, volition regarding tactile objects, volition regarding mind or mental phenomena, permanent or impermanent, and so on. And number eight, is different. Craving for forms, craving for sounds, craving for odors, craving for taste, craving for tactile objects, craving for mind or mental phenomena. Are they permanent or impermanent and so on? Now here there is a little difference. craving arises not at the beginning of seeing consciousness. It arises only when you reach the jhavana stage. If you understand the thought process, you will understand this. So when in the thought process, seeing is done by eye consciousness. So at that moment, there is eye consciousness, there is contact, there is perception, there is volition, but not yet craving. But when you reach the stage of jhavana, then craving may arise. So craving for forms and so on means craving for forms and so on at the stage of jhavana and not at the stage of seeing. And number nine is of elements, earth elements, water elements, heat or fire element, air element, and then space element and consciousness elements. So six elements are mentioned here. The usual four plus consciousness element and space element. And then the last one is aggregates to form feelings, perception, volitional formations, and consciousness. So they are asked one by one, like a permanent or impermanent, and then impermanent cell, and so on. So when you understand the first discourse, and the other discourse are not easy to understand. Not difficult to understand. And in the next group, there are 12, and the first 10 are practically the same as these 10 suttas. The only difference is not in these suttas, Rahula went to the Buddha and asked him to preach. But in the second in the second Vagga, the Buddha interrogates Rahula on his own initiative. That means Rahula come and sit near the Buddha, and then Buddha just talked to him, without first being asked for a teaching. So that is the only difference. The others are all the same. Then the last two suttas, and they are different. So in the first of these two, again it was delivered at Savatthi, when Buddha was living at Jetavana, and Rahula approached the Buddha, sat down at one side, and then said to him, "How knowing and how seeing do I making, mind making, and underlying tendency to conceit no longer occur in regard to the body with consciousness and in regard to all external signs?" Now here, eye making, mind making, and underlying tendency to conceit. Pali word is ahankara, mamankara, and mananusaya. So ahankara is translated as eye making. Big I, hyphen, and then making. And mamankara, mind making, M-I-N-E, hyphen, making. And mananusya, the underlying tendency to conceive. So how knowing, how see, how known, how seen do I making, mind making, and underlying tendency to conceive no longer occur in regard to this body with consciousness and in regard to all external signs? And of the Buddha is any kind of form whatsoever, whether past, future or present, internal or external, gross or subtle, inferior or superior, far or near, one sees all form as it really is with correct wisdom thus: this is not mine, this I am not, this is not myself. So when one sees like this, then in regard to this body with consciousness and in regard to all external signs, eye making, mind making, and underlying tendency to conceive no longer occur within. So if you understand and first rupa, if you understand rupa in all the varieties like past, present, and future, and so on, in reality, and with correct understanding, and that it is not mine, that this I am not, and that this is not myself, then the eye making, mind making, and tendency to underlying tendency to conceive no longer occur within. So Buddha answered all five aggregates in the same way. And the second sutta, again, Rahula approached the Buddha, sat down at one side, and then said to him or asked him, how known and how seen are eye making, mind making, and underlying tendency to conceit has transcended discrimination and is peaceful and well liberated. And again, Buddha answered whatever form, whether past, future, or present, internal or external, gross or subtle, inferior or superior, far or near. Having seen all form as it really is with correct wisdom, thus this is not mine, this I am not, this is not myself, one is liberated by non-clinging. So one is liberated when one sees rupa, and also later on vedana, sanya, and so on, as it really is, and understands that this is not mine, this I am not, and this is not myself, then one is liberated by non-clinging. Now this is not mine means not grasping by attachment. This I am not is not grasping by pride, and this is not myself is not by self. So when one sees clearly that it is not mine, that this I am not, and this is not myself, then one is liberated by non-clinging. And understanding that this is not mine, this I am not, and this is not myself, is actually by vipassana knowledge and also by magga knowledge. So it's by these two knowledges he understands that this is not mine, this I am not, and this is not myself. So how many suttas are there in this Rahula Sanyoda? 22. The first vagga consists of 10, and the second 12. Yeah. And these sodas are taught to Rahula for the maturation of his faculties. His faculties are not yet matured because he has not yet attained arahantship. So he Buddha taught this and he may practice, and then later on, how many years after that? Seven years to 20 years, about 13 years. So after about 13 years, Rahula became became an arahant. So Rahula is not so quick in understanding. Okay.
Sadhu, sadhu.